Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, September 4th, 2010. I'm Harley Schlanger and I will be your host. Over this last week, we've seen two social dynamics moving in absolutely opposite directions. On the one hand, we have the disaster known as the Obama administration, whose poll numbers are collapsing, his credibility is gone. I think even his teleprompter is thinking about firing him. And this is an administration failing on every single front. The point that Lyndon LaRouche made back in April of 2009, that this is a Nero figure, is more and more evident day by day, as well as the effects on the economy and the attempts to promote this idea that don't worry, just wait, it's going to come back. Well, it's not coming back. So that's one dynamic. But the other dynamic is that of LaRouche PAC, Lyndon LaRouche, the LaRouche Youth Movement, and led by the basement team working with Mr. LaRouche to implement the next great infrastructure policy, NWAPA, as the kickoff of the post-Obama era to put us in a new situation for mankind. And toward that end, Mr. LaRouche wrote a short statement this week that's up on the LaRouche PAC website. It's titled A Leaf from FDR's Book, and It Will Be Good. I'm just going to read a couple sections to open the program to give you a sense of where we'll be going with the discussion today. I do have two excellent guests. One is a longtime leader of the LaRouche movement, Jerry Rose, and the other is someone who's familiar to you from LaRouche PAC TV, Leandra Bernstein, who's in Purcellville and the co-host of the popular and punchy weekly feature, The Campaign Show, Down with the Traitors. But let me just start with a couple of statements from Lyndon LaRouche's paper, and you can find it up on the website. He begins by just saying that since launching the NWAPA project, there are certain aspects that become clear as to what this means. He said, "We must now add the action of setting actually breathing life into the design for that economic recovery, which NWAPA represents." And so he said, "We must therefore take a leaf out of President Franklin Roosevelt's 1933 book. To revive an economy whose living heart would soon cease breathing, even in as little as weeks, were President Barack Obama to remain in office, we must commit ourselves not merely to act in President Franklin Roosevelt's sense of urgency in spring and summer 1933, we must take certain sweeping actions, as he did then, to actually set the general economic recovery into motion." And then he says, "To come directly to the point I'm stating here, we must quickly, as if almost instantly, launch almost exactly the type of broadly defined measures of action which President Roosevelt set into motion as an essential emergency recovery operation during his first year in office, even during his first weeks in office. Exactly must be done very, very soon. The nut to be cracked is essentially this. We must virtually shut down Wall Street and what its associated financial monetary system implies, both in this nation and globally." And we're going to come back to that in a few moments. And in the final point that he makes, because he's not writing this as an academic exercise, but he's writing it to people who are on the website who are trying to figure out what is their role, what should they do, and if they're not trying to figure that out, they should be. He writes, "To this end, we require much more than care for the needs of people. We must care above all else for meeting the urgent needs of the people, that according to the principles of our federal Constitution, as the crisis faced by President Franklin Roosevelt shows us the true meaning of our constitutional system under terms of grave crisis like those we suffer today." And in this paper and in other statements recently, he has been emphasizing this question of government of, by, and for the people. And so that's what we'll be getting into in just a moment. But I'd like to begin, as we have recently, with a brief summary from the meeting that took place this morning with Mr. LaRouche. Leandra, I know you were there, and there were a couple of points that he brought up which are highly relevant for our discussion today. I wonder if you could start with that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just what you read from his statement about the urgent need to shut down Wall Street and actually put the the interests of the people above all else. One thing that we're seeing from Wall Street and their offshoots, especially the Federal Reserve, is an admission of their complete incompetence and inability from day one, from back in the summer, autumn of 2007, to deal with the crisis. And what happened and the way LaRouche began his discussion today was by pointing to the admission by Ben Bernanke just the other day that this was during the Financial Crisis Commission hearing just the other day, where he said that back in 2007, he didn't know that the subprime crisis would be this bad. He didn't understand the systemic weaknesses of the entire financial system. And so what this is, because what was happening at that time in 2007 was Lyndon LaRouche, in a very famous forecast, July 25th, 2007, during his international webcast, laid on the table that the system is finished now, that there is no action that any government can take within the present bounds of the system that will save it. Only a drastic change can save it. And only a few weeks later, he proposed his Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, which was to freeze home foreclosures and protect the banks, many of which we've seen go under since then, and many, many more foreclosures. So, I mean, just to put this in context, Bernanke, this was a very widely publicized forecast, and it was brought to many people's attention, including personally by members of the LaRouche movement, brought to the attention of Barney Frank, the chair of the Financial Services Committee in the House. And essentially, what Barney Frank said was, what you're saying, that the entire system is at stake, that's not true. This isn't systemic. This will go away. And then he famously bailed out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And so, I mean, in a sense, I'm kind of tempted to set up make a day calendar with, we can call it Speaking Frankly, and all the completely idiotic things that Barney Frank has said on record, we can just go day after day. One of them is this, at the warning by the LaRouche Youth Movement in Boston, that this crisis is systemic, and he said no.
We'd run out of magic markers if we did that kind of a chart. You know, also, Leandra, it's worth noting that forecast of LaRouche from July 25th, 2007 was widely circulated within economic circles and inside the Federal Reserve System. And so that Bernanke knew exactly what Mr. LaRouche said and was aware of the warnings from LaRouche that this is a systemic crisis, even as Bernanke continued to try and pretend it was just about a minor perturbation in the housing system.
Yeah, and now what we're facing is hyperinflation. It's Weimar hyperinflation, only this time on a global scale. And what LaRouche said about his forecasting, because it's very important to look at the authority of Lyndon LaRouche in this kind of situation, that he has prescribed the solutions time and again. And when we've failed to go with those solutions, we've gotten worse. We're on the brink, really, of the collapse of not only the United States, but the entire transatlantic system under these conditions of hyperinflation. And so what he emphasized in his discussion is his forecasting method, that he's not some untouchable genius. But the reason he's been right and all of his opponents have been wrong is because they're utterly incompetent. So
as Bernanke financial statistics,
some of them are kind enough to admit it in their own way.
Well, Leandra, let's go right from there into the work that you've been involved in through your work with The Basement and also getting the story out. which is, as you said, Mr. LaRouche has not merely offered his criticisms of Bernanke, but he's also consistently put forward a solution. And the biggest solution that's on the books right now is the building of the Nawapa project, which brings us back to the leaf from FDR's book. So what can you tell us about the Nawapa in terms of this kind of solution, this kind of systemic solution?
Well, one thing that's kind of interesting, just the leaf out of Franklin Roosevelt's book, is you had, if you're looking at the physical recovery of the United States, you had sort of three steps, and it's Franklin Roosevelt putting his hand on the Bible and being sworn into office. You had the passage of Glass-Steagall, which did actually two things. I mean, first of all, it cleaned up the banking system so that we could utter credit. But it also, gaining the trust of the American people was absolutely key and is absolutely crucial right now. And anyone in the Democratic Party should take that leaf from Franklin Roosevelt's book. Support Glass-Steagall now, even if you lose the House. This is the only way that we're going to get out of the crisis and the only way that the people are going to trust you at all. So he passed the Glass-Steagall, and shortly after, I think it was only 37 days into his administration, he passed the TVA through the Congress. And this was a real science driver. And today what we're talking about is, instead of, well, we're going to have to swear in a new president, go immediately with the Glass-Steagall and then launch the Nawapa. And this is going to be a real science driver. I mean, some of the considerations that have come up just from the organizing that's been coming from the basement and also from the regions of LaRouche PAC offices is some of these considerations we hadn't been looking at, including the question of the lift system in Idaho, you know, bringing all of that water, millions of acre feet of water, a river, up the Rocky Mountains, and the pressure, you know, certain seismic considerations of bringing that much water up to those elevations. And I mean, the responses so far to this from specialists, from engineering firms, from scientists, geologists, and so forth, has been incredible. I mean, we were expecting a lot of a good reaction, but it's really been beyond what we expected. And this is going to be very important on the question of recovery, because you're going to be putting 3 to 4 million people, highly skilled people, back to work on this program. And the nature of the project is such that you get these 3 to 4 million top-level jobs in terms of skill, in terms of education, and that's going to create the potential for more and more jobs down the line. And it also, it's kind of difficult to go through because there are so many things that are implied in this, including returning to the idea of a CCC, a Civilian Conservation Corps, to bring our youth, to bring young veterans who have already served the country back into a position where they can contribute something under this new organization.
Well, and people can go to the website, the LaRouchePAC.com website, and see the visuals, take the tour. Take a look at the scope of what we're talking about, and then get a sense of why it is that we're saying this is not simply about changing the earth, but is pointing toward the heavens. So you're listening to Leandra Bernstein on The LaRouche Show. I'm going to bring in Jerry Rose in just a moment. I have a couple of questions for Jerry, who has done work over the years on Franklin Roosevelt and recently picked up some newer material and went back in and took a look again. And Jerry, one of the things that I'd like to throw out to you from Lynn's paper, one of the things that jumps out of it is when he says we have to virtually shut down Wall Street. Now, a lot of people get nervous when they hear that because they think Wall Street is the American economy. And they don't understand that this is exactly the course that Franklin Roosevelt knew he had to take in 1933. Why don't you give us a sense of FDR's approach toward Wall Street when he was sworn in as president?
Well, I think the most important insight he had, and it was very clear to him even from his 1933 book, before he came in, he wrote a book called Looking Forward. It was clear to him that under the direction of Wall Street, government had been paralyzed. Hoover was paralyzed. Coolidge was paralyzed. They could do nothing. And when the 29 crash hit and then the massive unemployment hit, they will literally keep pumping money in to Wall Street. It didn't phase any of the unemployment. The banks kept getting more and more bankrupt. Roosevelt knew from very early on that he would have to break totally with Wall Street. It was very clear. And in his famous inaugural, where he said, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself," this is the big problem with the American popular opinion, which Lynn really went after. It's a disease. Popular opinion is a disease. They literally, government had shut down, industry had shut down, agriculture had shut down, local, state, and federal governments had shut down, and because of the domination of Wall Street. And Hoover was incapable of thinking anything but what was given to him by Wall Street and Morgan. Now, what preceded it was the Pecora Commission, but it really got going under Roosevelt and showed that these guys were not only stupid but corrupt.
Now, Jerry, let me just take this a step further, because while FDR was fighting Wall Street, he came in at the very moment where you had the Hitler dictatorship being consolidated
right.
in Germany, you had fascism in Italy, there was a vibrant fascist movement in France, and there were people in the United States who were funding those fascist movements and who were moving forward fascism in the United States. So Lynn made an important point, I think, about this question of a constitutional tradition, that FDR knew he could not act simply as a dictator to implement these programs, but he had to do it through the constitutional tradition. How great was that danger, and how did FDR take it on?
Well, this was the thing that struck me the most about the fireside chats. That at the time when Roosevelt came in, Mussolini was the dictator of Italy. Hitler had just pulled the Reichstag fire in Germany, becoming the dictator there. Franco was a dictator in Spain, Salazar, Portugal. As you point out, in France, there was an enormous fascist movement. Mm? And Roosevelt, and this was a very profound, in my view, a genius, because he was prepared to break all precedent. And that's part of genius. In other words, what your ideas tell you to do, you throw out all precedent in terms of Wall Street, in terms of the way things are done. In the New Deal book by Schlesinger, it describes the first 100 days, but it describes the first 2 hours. Where he walked in and basically where there was paralysis. And in this 1933 book, you can't get over, he describes the utter, total paralysis from state, federal, local, everywhere was paralysis. He walked in and within 2 hours, the place was humming, right? Harry Hopkins went to work. He did Glass-Steagall, the first act. I think within hours of his coming in, he closed down every bank in the country, right, and opened them up within a week or 10 days, right. But what he did with the fireside chats in particular, and his whole impulse tendency, was he went to the people of this country at a time where there was nothing but dictators all over Europe. And he said, you, in fact, he could not do it without the people. And he understood that because he had to go against Wall Street and, very importantly, the media. The media was totally controlled by Wall Street. And through creating, through the fireside chat and the use of radio, Roosevelt reached to 150 million Americans and explained, not through demagoguery and, you know, I'm going to get rid of Wall Street, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. He didn't do that. You know, he what he did was he said, here's what I'm going to do. Here's how it's going to work. Right. And you have to understand this. That's what the fireside chat, that was the form of the fireside chat. And by going to the population, when they heard his first inaugural, I mean, the letters poured in, you know, the hope and the optimism that we had a leader who was prepared to speak for us, the majority of the American people, inspired a movement, which, by the way, there was a lot of real stupid opposition to Roosevelt on all these policies inside the Congress. But when he came in and demonstrated a passion for the people of this country, and the people responded, there he got, within hours, Glass-Steagall passed, within hours, both houses. They said, we're going to act. And then when Wall Street gave him guff about putting people to work through Harry Hopkins, WPA or PWA and other things, just putting people to work, when they gave him guff, and they were complaining, you can't have welfare, you can't put people to work, you can't do this thing. He said, you know, when you guys were on the ground, I came in and I saved you. I don't want to hear anything. There was no talk about free enterprise then, was there? Right? Nobody beefed me about this is not free enterprise when I saved the banks, when I recapitalized those that were bankrupt.
And
when
he saved them not through a bailout,
no,
but by actually
recapitalized them,
cleaning out the bad debt and putting it on hold.
Right.
Now, so, I want to tell our listeners they can get in on this discussion by sending their questions in via email to radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio@larouchepub.com. And you can ask questions of Jerry or Leandra. And Leandra, I'd like to get back to you because Jerry was just talking about what FDR did within hours. Here we are nearly 2 years into the Obama administration. It's quite a contrast, isn't it?
Oh, forget about it. And you want to talk about, look, people have to look back to what happened with the incoming Bush administration and what also hasn't changed under the Obama administration. That we have, in a sense, been under this dictatorship, where the government, instead of going to the people as Roosevelt did, and educating them, this is why I'm taking these actions. You've had administrations that have said, we're doing this for your own good. Why are we going into the war in Iraq? We're doing this for your own good. Why are we passing a health care bill that will kill you? We're doing this for your own good. Don't ask questions. And so you see, it's just so stark with what Franklin Roosevelt did, and especially what he did with the TVA, which is a very useful precedent for looking at what we're going to do with NWAPA, because you go into this area of the Tennessee Valley across seven states, covers seven states. So first of all, I mean, the Supreme Court had a field day about that. But you're dealing with a very poor population where Southern colonialism still existed in a very large degree, where farmers were literally destroying their land, abandoning land, because they were committed to the cash crop, to tobacco, to cotton, and the education, what people understood of things like scientific agriculture, fertilizer, even the idea that you generally don't want to plant a cornfield on a piece of land that has an 80% grade. You generally don't want to plant a cornfield on the side of a mountain. And this is what was going on. So how do you go into that territory? You have people who have their old traditions. They were given the land. There were some stories about veterans from the American Revolution being given land in the Tennessee Valley in return for their service. So how do you go to these people who have this pioneering spirit, but are also sort of ingrained in how they've been doing things, and say, well, you farmers down here have been farming all wrong, or we're going to have to move you off your land because we're going to put a reservoir in your county. And so this was a challenge, and it was a challenge of educating people in what were already their better interests, because they had real problems. They were fighting disease. They were fighting severe soil erosion. I mean, making a desert virtually out of this territory.
Well, Andrew, let me ask you another question on that, because the scientific, the agricultural questions, these are important issues, and of course we're going to face them again with NWAPA, because you have these lunatic environmentalists who say that rivers were created by God and they should not be moved or changed. But there's another side to this, which I think is also part of an education, and I'd like your thoughts on it, and then Jerry's, because he sort of alluded to this, but changing the way people think about government. Because a lot of people didn't know the ideals of the American constitutional system, and this is something they had to be educated on through the fireside chats. Look at what we've got today. You've got these clowns like Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin who say the solution is no government. Obviously, they're not paying much attention because the government right now is being run by these Wall Street banks and corporations. But do you see that same kind of process underway with the work that Mr. LaRouche is doing and the work that you're doing at LPAC TV to give people a different sense of their personal responsibility under our Constitution?
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't, in our system, you can't willfully be a slave. You can. I mean, you can, but if you look at the past decade at least, you see where it gets us. And what we're doing here, and especially what the three candidates, Summer Shields, Keisha Rogers, and Rachel Brown, what they're doing is incredibly significant in going out and educating the people, saying these are the solutions that we're putting on the table. We're putting NWAPA on the table. We're putting impeachment square on the table, or Obama's forced resignation, rather. Impeachment would take much too long. But getting Obama out of office so that we can begin to clean this up, so that you can actually have a functional government and a government that acts in your own interest. And the American people aren't going to trust the government until you get in a situation where they begin to go back to Roosevelt, to go back to those principles, and even state it as Roosevelt did, as a commitment to principle, a commitment to the general welfare.
Let me mention, you brought up the campaigns. In a little bit, couple of hours, Summer Shields, at 5 p.m. Eastern on his website, is having a live NWAPA webcast on the North American Water and Power Alliance is more than a project. So at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, on the Summer for Congress website, you'll be able to tune in and get a webcast, which includes some scientists and engineers in the Bay Area where Summer's running, and also participation from the basement. So I want to make sure people know about that. Jerry, just to come back to you on this question of making the Constitution alive.
Sure.
This is, in fact, what has to go on in this country periodically, because the anti-constitutional forces are so powerful, and it seems as though the constitutional forces go to sleep or somehow are eclipsed? Isn't that something that we face?
Well, it is this question. See, one of the most essential features of the Constitution is not that it prescribes a set of positive laws. It doesn't say on such and such a day you'll do this, on such a day you'll do that, and give a recipe. See, that's exactly what the Constitution did not do. And what Roosevelt inspired in the population as a whole, and he brought a group of young people into government and became his administration, is, you know, and this goes to the core of the failed personality of a person like Obama, right? An actual human being faces reality and attempts to come up with hypothesis based on principle to solve those problems. Okay? And then you act. What happens today is people have been so dumbed down, have been so gullible, have been so used up by the media and the educational system. They refuse to follow their own, they refuse to deal with principles and apply principles to problems. They come up with catchwords, they come up with noise phrases, they don't mean anything. Now, when you get to a crisis like we're in now, all those previous hypotheses about how things work break down. And what Roosevelt did, and this is what struck me, if you want to say something new about the Roosevelt question, what struck me, and you can't underestimate it, because his 1933 book sort of gives the show away, everything had broken down. Everything had come to paralysis. State, local, and federal government had been paralyzed. They kept trying to apply the same exact pump priming, you know, methods. It did nothing to phase the problem. And the problem kept getting worse and worse and worse. Remind you of something? That's what's happening today. Then you get a genius like Roosevelt, who goes to the Constitution of this republic and says, screw these guys, right? Everything they're doing is making it worse. If we don't do something about this, we lose our republic. And therefore, Roosevelt, there is a quality of courage to genius. There has to be. There always has to be, right? Look at Lynn. And you kick over the chessboard. And you say, we're going to totally reorganize the banking system to have a credit policy, which is what Roosevelt did. And that the credit was going to be given to farm, agriculture, and other things. You need a science driver, right? Something that will transform man's relationship to nature, which was the TVA. And anyone who gave him guff, be it Wall Street or some stupid congressman or senator, he mobilized the people of this country. And these guys got the message. And we're going to ram this through. There's no point, you know, we discussed it today. There's no point in begging the Congress for anything. They have shown a proclivity to do unimaginable things to the people of this country. That's why they're going to get thrown out.
You know, we have an interesting question sent in from the email from our friend Brian out in the Bay Area, who asks, after Obama is gone, are we going to have a fireside chat mechanism to educate the American people? Leandra, you might have some ideas on that.
Well, I think that's actually a lot of what our responsibility is here at LaRouche PAC and at LPAC TV. But absolutely. I mean, the first step, though, is getting these videos, the daily programs, the off the cuff reports, and the weekly report with LaRouche, these basement discussions out as broadly as possible. And one major thing that comes up in some of these discussions that are posted on the website, you find ideas in there that are so gripping. It came out in the basement roundtable, which was hosted by Ardina just a little while ago, and then the discussion that Ed Hamler had with Sky Shields, which is that what we're going to embark on in this new period is to actually transform the biosphere of the planet, and that this is not a simple recovery in the sense of we're going to get back to the happy days when business was good and my stock portfolio looked all right. But what we're coming into is actually a completely new era in human development, as LaRouche has been describing these different stages of infrastructure as platforms. And the platform with the Nuapa is to begin to look at the Earth's biosphere as a whole, instead of looking at particular regions and the effects of one local phenomenon on a particular region. I mean, one thing that came up in a meeting we had earlier today in the office here was these hurricanes, like Hurricane Earl, which just missed the East Coast here. These kinds of storms largely originate from the Sahara and the Sahel region, and hot winds coming off the mountains. And this has been identified by various scientists, so we're looking at pulling that picture together.
So the Lake Chad project of recapturing the Southern Sahara might actually have an effect as to what stirs up the oil in the BP oil in the Gulf, huh?
Yeah, well, you have to look at these things and the way that LaRouche looks at it, the way that a scientist looks at entire systems. So the Earth is an entire system. You don't talk about you generally don't hear people talking about certain regions on Mars. That you try to look at these things from the top down, and so the challenge now is to take on the development of Earth as a whole, as a space program.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, let me come back to you on this question of the leaf from FDR's book.
Right.
Let's assume that the American people are going to decide in the month ahead that they can't coexist with Obama. And my suggestion is we offer him the position of president of Harvard, because he really couldn't screw that institution up anymore. And they probably deserve each other. So it's a nice retirement position for him. And Michelle can go walking around Boston and buying goods at all the trinket shops there and have a good time. But you get Obama out, and then we're going to have the work of getting the shovels started, the earth-moving equipment. It's going to be an enormous change in thinking of the American people to take up this kind of challenge after the last 30 years of environmental crap.
Sure. It happens instantaneously. And this is what Lynn discusses in the mass strike phenomena. You see, we're all human. And what Leandra just said is indicative of the kind of thinking. Once we unleash that in the population, which is something, which is the reason that oligarchism has always hated. This is this question that Lynn raises on this Prometheus question, right? Prometheus bound. And as Shelley takes it up, Prometheus unbound. But the Zeus question is that people, when given the opportunity to be human, as we see in these great upshifts during the Renaissance, as we see in these great upshifts in America, you know, around Washington, Hamilton, and the original founding of the Republic, again under Lincoln and again under Franklin Delano Roosevelt, that there is something human when taken, when the lid is off, when you call the gods of Olympus what they are, and you stand as a people to defend your humanity, as Leandra just indicated, the kinds of things we're going to do. This is what the oligarchy has been terrified of. Because frankly, every human on the planet, in every country, is capable of that kind of thought. And therefore, by us unleashing that capacity under these conditions, which Lynn calls a mass strike, which Shelley discusses in The Defense of Poetry, it's instantaneous. People can speak and think and grasp ideas and passionately in ways they never thought they could, because there's something uniquely human about all of us.
And there's also the other side of this, which is to go back to what Leandro was saying about seeing this as a global system. One of the points Mr. LaRouche has been making is once you get the commitment to get Obama out, get a Glass-Steagall policy in so he can clean up the mess in the international banking situation, and then you start NUAPA, there's enormous potential for every other part of the globe to participate in great infrastructure projects. And Leandra, I'd like you to just comment on that.
Well, yes. Again, you can go back to the TVA example, where it was literally every single country on the planet would send some sort of ambassador to look at what was done in the Tennessee Valley. And I mean, that was one river basin. And so what we're already seeing in terms of the possibilities coming from places like Russia, where they have had major programs like NUAPA on their books for a long time. I was just reading from a member of Roosevelt's kitchen cabinet who was writing about, he was writing in 1936 about a Russian program that was to get more water into the Volga River for agriculture and for industry. And what they had proposed was cutting off some of the rivers, damming off some of the rivers that were running off into the Arctic, and reversing the flow to be directed then back into the Volga. And the commentary from this member of the Roosevelt team was, is there nothing that the Academy of Sciences hasn't thought of? this project will make the TVA look like a kindergarten exercise. And so you do have a lot of these projects still on the books. There's big concern over the Aral Sea, which is drying up.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Again, the program for Lake Chad in Africa, where the Congo River, due to massive erosion, years of erosion, slips off into the ocean, as LaRouche said, a whole lot faster than it has to. And so those are just a couple of the projects. And there's, it's, you look at NUAPA, and LaRouche often raises a point that this was an idea that wouldn't die, because it is one of these things that grips you. It's like one of these ideas that you can't get out of your head. You read a poem or you listen to a piece of music, and you just can't get it out of your head. But this is different, because this is really the kind of mission that people dedicate their entire lives to accomplishing, that people put their lives' work into accomplishing in whatever nation this type of project happens.
Let me say something, because I want to get back to this question of the Fireside Chat and the institution of it. Look, the website, the LaRouche Pack website, is a revolution. In other words, the there's a total revolution going on. And we've had responses from people we talk to who have increasingly seen the website as their institution, as the way they get their, not just news, but their, how the world looks, right? And we've seen people who previously had not much education, not much interest. Certainly the media kills you with, it just inundates you, the normal media, with just noise and ugliness and, you know, everything. These people are now, we brief them, we call them, and we brief them, and they're briefing us. Now, we would be talking, you know, one person reported, well, they were giving the briefing. He said, oh, yeah, Leandra said that 2 days ago. Yeah, it's hard to get a briefing in, you know. You know, or Adina said that, or I love this. But the most interesting aspect of all of it is because they now see the world through those eyes. They've changed their cultural commitment, right? They naturally organize everybody around them. When they hear nonsense, when they hear stupidity, since it's coming from them, you know, it's what we call the steak, not the sizzle, right? It's coming from inside them. We've seen a total explosion in terms of the capacity for the population to do the kind of work that Leandra and we are talking about, and Lynn, of course. So, look, we've got the institution. It works. I can tell you. I'm not just talking about one case. I'm talking about several reports to me. Everybody who's listening has to get everybody involved in listening to the LaRouche Pack website, in discussion with us, to affect this explosion, because we're getting that kind of response. I just wanted to put that in.
Well, in keeping with that, I want to call attention to our listeners of a debate that's coming up on Tuesday, in which Rachel Brown, who is running a brilliant campaign bringing music and beauty and real ideas to the voters in the district outside of Boston, which has been misrepresented by the lying bailout Barney Frank for the last almost 30 years. He was so hit by Rachel's interventions that he decided to debate her. But Mr. Big Shot Barney, who thinks he's the greatest debater in the world, set up a debate that's basically taking place in a closet with no studio audience, limited visibility. But even that, he's so frightened by what Rachel will do that he's called out for his shock troops to come out and demonstrate outside of the Newton cable station to give him support. And then afterwards, I think this was actually a threat. He said they should go out for pizza with him. And Lyndon LaRouche said, consult with your physician first, because that could be bad for you, because that Frank ain't kosher. But in any case, Rachel will be doing a debate. If you're in the Boston area, call our office there, get in touch with us, and come out on Tuesday night. If you are tired of Obama, if you're tired of people like Barney Frank, who has no limit to the bailouts he'll give to swindlers and crooks, and no limit to the numbers of lies he'll tell his constituents, if you're tired of that, you can't just sit around and gripe. You've got to turn out and back up Rachel. And the primary then, this debate is next Tuesday night, the 7th. The primary is the following Tuesday. So that gives us just a little more than a week to mobilize to get a vote out that would be the best signal that Obama has to go. If Rachel Brown could win the primary in the 4th District in Massachusetts against Barney Frank, I think Obama would be packing his bags the next day. So I think that's a very important immediate task. And by the way, it's in the city where Franklin Roosevelt spent time in college and John Kennedy was born. Kennedy was born in that district. So this is a good way to revive this American system tradition with Rachel Brown. And I know, Leandra, you've been working on that. Why don't you, from your standpoint of looking at this thing weekly on the campaign show, the work that's being done by Rachel to move the forces behind NWAPA, how do things look to you?
I'm sorry. I was just so excited about the debate. I was just having visions of Barney Frank sputtering and them handing out ponchos to the people in the front row to keep them dry.
Well, you know what they say, that Rachel mopped the floor with Barney Frank, and they're now going to have to rebuild the floor.
I pity that floor.
Yeah.
But what they've done just this past week, I think they brought in about 30. They had 30 campaign volunteers organizing all throughout the district, and this is still having reverberations, obviously, because Barney is so panicked and sending out. I mean, I wouldn't exactly call them shock troops. They're kind of
shocked
housewives, middle class white men. But the effect of this consistent organizing. She was just brought in. Rachel was just brought into to a nursing home. They sought her out to have her come in and address this group because they. The head of the nursing home had seen the Hitler mustache on Obama and Rachel's stance on his whole healthcare fiasco and brought her in. And also the organizing throughout the district, in Boston and in various different locations in the district, with bringing classical music, mm-hmm. and then even old American songs that people might only know if they went through military service. Bringing that to people, and it's been incredibly inspiring to watch. And what I heard from campaign organizers is that it's indescribable. That to discuss it is one thing, but to actually take part in organizing for this campaign, which is this primary. Is absolutely winnable, and Barney Frank should just close his eyes and let it pass.
You know, I was up there last weekend, and I participated in one of the choral rallies in Brookline, and this is an area that initially we didn't go to because we thought it would be Barney Frank territory. And what was interesting is the music was so beautiful, and they did a lot from the Bach motet, the Jesu meine Freude, that people were stopping and gathering around, and then they were saying, well, what is it, LaRouche? How could this be LaRouche? And you'd end up in discussions with people who thought they didn't like LaRouche and ended up agreeing and going into a total crisis. They had to go back to Trader Joe's to buy more wine to deal with it because they were in a total crisis because they were confronted by something that was outside of their vision. And I think this is the point to go back to this question of the fireside chats and what you do in organizing this. What Lyndon LaRouche has done to put NWAPA, as he has, as something other than simply an infrastructure program, what we're really doing is challenging the American people to open their minds to imagination, to thinking boldly, and opening their hearts to think of the world and the future. And, you know, Jerry, I think this is really the ultimate challenge, whether you're raising money to support these campaigns or out there trying to win over voters, is to communicate to people that the reason we have a crisis is because they became small. And someone like Rachel, who herself is relatively small, is standing up to this fat slob Barney Frank and basically saying, you don't scare me, Barney. I'm bringing truth to the constituents that you lie to. So I think, Jerry, this is really where the essence of organizing comes in.
Sure. But again, you're speaking to a population now, ever since at least one of the markers is August of last year, that they realize they have to do something. Their will, the majority of people, I'm not talking about everybody, but the majority of the people, say 70-80% of the people, their will has been engaged. They're going to have to do something. And once this, a moral quality of the, I can't just sit around and watch, I can't, you know, Paul Gallagher pointed out, 40 million people in this country now are either unemployed or not even on the charts, right? Not even calculated.
They're non-people to President Obama.
Yeah, non-people. So people are increasingly in a heightened potential, but you have to give them something that speaks to that potential. And what Roosevelt did in his way, what Lynn doing in a much greater way, and the LaRouche Youth Movement, as was pointed out through these campaigns, is speaking to something that people are ready for. Like you say, there is no limit to what we could do.
Well, Leandro, why don't you give people a preview for what's going to be on your weekly campaign show? Because anyone who's not watching it regularly is just not getting the real story on the campaign. And I think that I would encourage everyone who is listening to the program today not just to watch it, but to organize people to watch it. This is our fireside chat. So what do you have coming up with you and Matthew this weekend?
Well, this weekend we're definitely going to be featuring Rachel Brown's campaign prominently. But there is just one more thing that I want to add.
Sure.
Because if you look at what the basement did with the with putting out this interactive 3D map on the website, we're organizing the recovery, and it's so important to look at the fact of what this map just opened up for us. This is the potential for the survival of the United States. This is the potential for the survival of civilization. And it's something that we willed into existence. It's something that we put on the table in our own. This was according to our timetable that the recovery has to happen immediately. And we willed this recovery onto the table. And, I mean, it's really taking on a life of its own.
Oh, and this is, people can go to the website and see it. And besides the interactive map and the tour that you can take, there's a lot of material coming up. In fact, every day there's something new between the off-the-cuff, the new Glass-Steagall feature will be up within the next couple of days. And this is, again, very important, because if you want to have NWAPA, you've got to have Glass-Steagall. And this is precisely the kind of anti-Wall Street policy that Mr. LaRouche has been calling for a number of years. And Jerry, we've just got a couple of minutes left, but do you just want to say something on the importance of Glass-Steagall?
Well, the combination of Glass-Steagall and the action of the our TVA or the NWAPA. Look, this, you know, but also look, I mean, we while we're doing that, and Lynn made the point that we are going to put everyone, we're going to save every city, every county, we're going to make sure the firemen are there, make sure the policemen are there, make sure the healthcare system is there, make sure that what we have in place remains in place and extended a bit while we do this. And I think it's clear that we have nothing to fear if we tell the truth. We have nothing to fear. We know what to do.
Well, and this is the moment to do it, because you have the collapse of Obama, the collapse of the economy. It's not as though we can sit back and wait and see what's going to happen. We know what's going to happen. LaRouche has made his forecasts. He's been accurate. As he said, he may not be the greatest genius on the planet, but compared to the people who are making forecasts other than him, they don't even know what a forecast is. So I would encourage people to go to the LPAC website, LaRouchePAC.com. Bring your friends to it. We've got activities, including today at 5 p.m. Eastern. Go to the SummerForCongress.com. The website of Summer Shields, who's running against Nancy Plastic Face Pelosi. And this is an opportunity for you to get an inside report from the basement. We'll have tomorrow night the next edition of the campaign show with Leandra Bernstein and Matt Ogden. And we'll be back next Saturday, and I'm sure between now and then there'll be more that's happening, because this global process is being unleashed, and this weekend is Labor Day, and usually Labor Day is considered the beginning of the campaign season. So keep your eye on LaRouchePack.com. Thank you for joining us today on The LaRouche Show, and we'll be back next Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern.